It takes a village to raise a child. We all know that, right? But what happens if you can't find your village? Because raising your child is really, really tough. What if you were so filled with shame and doubt and guilt and fear of judgment that you don't share your triumphs and your struggles? You don't talk about it because you don't think anyone can possibly relate. Well, I've been there, and it was really hard for me to find my tribe. So I decided to make mine. I went out and found these amazing mothers who are also in the trenches, struggling to raise their kids. Together, we are a community. And in this podcast, On the Hard Days, you'll find motivating stories from other real moms who get it. We're going to accept who we are and how we show up for our children each and every day, even on the hard days. Welcome back, everybody. I am super, super excited to bring this mom onto this show today. This is Kara McLean. She has neurodiverse children, which she will get into soon, but also she's a life coach for moms. And when we had our conversation a few weeks ago, there were so many similarities, so many things that stuck out for me raising my own neurodiverse children, but especially my oldest son, who is 2E, he's gifted, and struggles with anxiety and ADHD and those sorts of things. So first of all, before we get into that, Kara, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this is great. I love the opportunity to show moms, show them off, so to speak, and talk about all the amazing things that you do. So why don't you sort of back up and tell us about you and your family?
Well, there's a lot. So my kids are a little bit older now. They're almost 13 and 14. So we're in seventh grade and just entering high school. And both of them are very happy now to be in school after, you know, the online education and being isolated and all that. So far that's going really well, even COVID-wise. So fingers crossed that that continues.
Knock on wood right there.
Yeah, exactly. So as a younger parent, long, long ago, it was the kind of thing where, you know, with our oldest, nothing really. I mean, we knew he was a bright kid. He was, you know, a little demanding here and there, but nothing super crazy until he started school in kindergarten. We tried a few different preschools, but they were like preschool, so it was still pretty okay. And then the structure of kindergarten, and it was full day kindergarten as well, which was just such a switch. It was not a great fit. And we had a lot of just struggles because he was, at that point, my son was already reading and, you know, he could do math. And so all the stuff that they were learning, he already knew, plus like just totally being bored. So anyway, it was a lot of calls from the school. It was a lot of like, you know, him now looking back, I can see there was probably anxiety, but at the time it was like, you know, he's faking a stomach ache to come home and then he wants to go for like sushi or like frozen yogurt. And it's like, okay. Now I can see that it was probably anxiety, but at that point I didn't know, but it launched us into just a bunch of questions. Like, I think that's the first thing that comes up is like, what is going on here? Like, we know he's bright, but you know, there were enough like questions that I was like, is there something wrong? I think that's the biggest thing that comes up first is like, is there something wrong with my child? Like, why can't he follow directions or sit in the circle or, you know, do the things that the other kids are doing? And it's a really hard time, right? When you're kind of figuring it out. And so we, within all that, we ended up moving, which when he was in first grade, which was also a nightmare because then he had three different schools in one year and it didn't go well either in any of those places. Mm-hmm. So, it's like finding like, does he have ADHD? That was the big question, I think, because that's not that the teachers can say anything necessarily, but that's like, they were kind of hinting like, maybe you should get things checked out. So, Yeah. So just finding the right practitioner. So we kind of went through a few different people, and one said like, oh, he's like a slam, like a quote from her is he's a slam dunk for ADHD, like without even having met him at all. And so that kind of set me off right off the bat, like, really? And then there was some things about giftedness that she didn't even know. Like she didn't know what overexcitabilities were, or so I was like, okay, I'm not listening to you anymore. So then we found actually Dan Peters at the Summit Center in California, because it was close to where we were. And he was like, oh yeah, he's not ADHD, he's fine. So I was like, okay, so now he's totally, but it just made me, just kind of makes you question like all the, for me anyway, all the diagnoses and, because there's so many blurred lines, and I think it makes it really hard for parents and especially moms, because we tend to be the ones who kind of try to figure it all out for the most part and carry the like the invisible weight of making the right decisions and finding the information and finding the people to help and all of that. So I'm happy to be on the other, not necessarily on the other side of it, but things have definitely evened out as maturity has caught up. So yeah, that it's not quite so asynchronous as it was in the younger years.
Yes. It's very asynchronous in the younger years for sure.
Yeah. And then I have a second child who's also gifted, also sort of like on the borderline of ADHD, but not really. And he's never, no, we did actually get him assessed when we moved back to Washington. So we're in Washington State. We did move back here and ended up getting him assessed as well. And so, so not technically 2E, but like there's so much in reading all the literature and everything. There's so many similarities of all of it. So,
yeah, that sounds like my kid. And I'm wondering too, especially in the younger years, it sounds like you already knew some things about giftedness and overexcitabilities, and that's good. Or maybe, or did you just dive into the research?
I knew, you know, it's funny. I think when I was starting to kind of dive in, I knew a little bit just from being in education before I had kids. Not that they teach you much in teacher education about giftedness, but I had started, you know, doing the research. When the questions come up, you get on the computer and try to find as much as you can, probably too much. And then you're like, oh my gosh, like, it's like all these different things. Mm-hmm. So I knew a little. And then actually the Tilt Parenting podcast was just starting when my son was like in first grade, when all this was kind of maybe second, but like right at the beginning. And so I started listening to that from the get-go. It was like the same thing, like, oh my gosh, she's talking about my kid. Mm-hmm. There's so many similarities. And then once you go down that rabbit hole of the research, it doesn't really ever stop. A lot of the books I read like 3/4 the way through and then don't totally finish them, but
and you don't need to. It's the sort of thing you can just keep coming back to again and again.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, where did I hear that? Where did I read that? You flip through your, let me access my library and, you know, dive through the books. That is so relatable. Tilt Parenting, the Tilt Parenting podcast. I would love to have her on the show. But that is an amazing podcast. And it was one of the first few that I found as well. Mm-hmm. And I would listen to her while I went for walks and went for runs. And I would be just beside myself with glee that what I was feeling and experiencing was a real thing with my kid. That was awesome for me too. It seems like the blurred line, as you called it, which I thought was perfectly said, between giftedness and ADHD keeps coming up again and again and again. And on my end with my oldest, because it's so hard to pinpoint exactly what it is, we just sort of think of it as he's all of it. He's, you know, there is anxiety, there is ADHD, there is sensory processing, there is giftedness, there is highly sensitive he is highly sensitive, I should say.
Yeah.
And it just piles on, but really it's not one thing and then another thing and then another thing. It's just this melting pot. It's like this soup of all of those. Tell me about what you have gathered about ADHD and giftedness and where those lines blur together.
You know, yeah, that's a hard question. And as you're talking, it makes me think, and this is, I feel like what I experienced, I might not be totally answering your question 100%, but I feel like it puts a lot of pressure, or at least I felt a lot of pressure on like making the right decision as to which path to go down. Because if I went down the ADHD path and was like, okay, I need a diagnosis, there would have been people to give me a diagnosis. Or, you know, having not chosen to go down that path, I also feel a little bit like, did we make the right decision? Because maybe there were resources. But as a parent, like, it doesn't really make that much of a difference in terms of how you parent the child. Like, I still have books about ADHD. Because I know that some of those strategies would help my kids, even if they don't have a diagnosis of ADHD. So I think for me as a parent, it's kind of like my philosophy about everything, like even like religion, right? Like you just take what works. That's kind of how I work. It's like, I'm not really like a, I don't want to say fan because that's not the right word, but I'm not like a hardcore, like this is the way things have to be kind of person. It's like, well, that one over there works a little bit. And then this part of that like strategy works. Mm-hmm. And so I just try to piece it together. Mm-hmm. And then it's always changing too. So that's fun.
Yes. Yes, it is.
But yeah, I think the lines are going to be different for everyone. So there's a ton of similarities and it makes it really hard. And that's going to be different for every situation, I think, even though there are patterns, because I mean, same as you, like talking with other friends who have similar kids and similar situations. And then the project that I'm working on too, there's tons of similarities, but everybody has a slightly different experience within that kind of umbrella.
Yes. And I think that, and you kind of pointed this out, but like certain professionals are kind of going to naturally gravitate, in my opinion, towards certain diagnoses. And if I approach my pediatrician, which we did actually, long story short, I had actually gone a different route at first, kind of seeking out therapists and OT and all of those things, and ended up, you know, reaching back to my pediatrician and saying the meltdowns, the defiance, the anger, the aggression, all of it, it's completely out of control. And this is pretty much rock bottom for us. What do we do now? And he's like, sounds like it's time for medication. And at that point it was like, yes, let's try it. It's ADHD medication. He doesn't even have that as a diagnosis. I say that he has ADHD because the medicine worked quote unquote, worked. I mean, made him feel much more calm, relaxed, in control. I mean, he's like a different kid. Mm-hmm. But we never had that as a diagnosis. It wasn't even on our radar. It was the giftedness. It was the perfectionism, sort of the OCD piece, the sensitivity, the anxiety. And now I'm like, well, I guess he has ADHD, but like, does it even matter? Because like you said, you can have all the books. You're going to pull from the books what works for your kid. And that may be a little bit from the ADHD book and a little bit from the sensory processing book and the gifted book, well, like whatever, because each kid is just so different. And I appreciate that. And yet our kids are all the same in that they are so complicated. They are so, their brains are just so, so different from neurotypical kids. And there's just so much more to them. That's something that I don't think people understand, especially about my son, especially about giftedness. And we can talk about that too. And the sort of the stereotype around what giftedness looks like.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh my gosh. But people don't know. And it's like, well, in school, well, if I just give him some harder worksheets, like, no, that's not it. You know, he thinks on an existential level, he's pondering things that other 8-year-olds are not pondering. And so when you speak to him, like he's an 8-year-old, he almost takes offense to that because it's just like, right. How dare you speak to me like I'm a kid? You know, my brain is fired up for adult yeah. conversations about certain topics. You know, people yeah. just don't know what to do with kids like mine. Mm-hmm. It's just frustrating. But yeah, the gifted stereotype, that's something that I'm trying to explain as I go, as I introduce him to new teachers, new people. It's like, he is gifted. But when I say gifted, I don't mean, I'm not bragging about him. I'm not saying he's the world's best reader or whatever. I'm saying it's actually can bring about negative things, anxiety and depression and lack of self-worth. And yeah. did you find any of that as a struggle explaining your kids too and their giftedness?
You know,
years ago, I searched for a group of mothers who might understand what I was going through in raising my out-of-the-box kid, and I came up empty-handed. Instead of strengthening my resolve and digging deeper, I gave up and came to the conclusion the group doesn't exist because I'm doing something wrong. Those feelings of shame, guilt, and doubt stayed with me for years, eventually leading me to create the support group community I wished I always had, which then led to instant friendships. These are mothers who don't need you to explain it. They get it. And now, my support group community, Mothers Together, is thriving. We hold small group, personalized virtual meetings weekly and catch up on our struggles and wins over the last week. We leave resources and questions for each other on our off of social media private forum, and we even attend virtual live Q&As with expert therapists, OTs, educators, and more. If you haven't yet found your people who not only understand what you're going through, but also can completely relate, Mothers Together is for you. If you're looking for lifelong friendships in a judgment-free, personalized space for weeks, months, or years to come, Mothers Together is for you. Mothers Together opens its doors on the first of every month, but signups start the week before. Head on over to ontheharddays.com/motherstogether to get more information, read testimonials, and sign up. Still have questions after you check out the page? Send me an email at ontheharddays@gmail.com or DM me on Facebook or Instagram, and I'd be happy to chat with you personally. I don't want you to ever feel the way that I felt, which was alone, anxious, and depressed. Your people do exist. They're looking for you, too. And you'll find them in Mothers Together. Visit ontheharddays.com/motherstogether for more. Now back to the episode.
Yes. Yes and no. One, my sons, both, I would say the younger son is maybe the more like existential one of the two. But he was never like outwardly anxious, if that makes sense. So I never had, and he's super social. So I never had to really, go to bat for him or like warn his teachers. And it was always like a question, like, for my older son, like, do I let them know information ahead of time? Or do I just let it ride and wait until something happens? Because I didn't want to like paint a picture of a certain type of kid and then have them like treat him as that and then just be a self-fulfilling prophecy in that way. So I kind of played it both and really like, honestly, as he got older, it got better. And once he got into the gifted program that was separate, that was even better because the teachers got it and they would really sit down with him writing was his like no-go. Like he'd throw the journal across the room and be like, no, not doing that. But they would sit down with him and like try to figure it out. Like, well, what is it? You know, I don't know how they did it, but they finally would get him to write. Whereas the younger teachers, he just was the kid that had a stack of books in the back of the classroom and he just kind of read all day. I don't know if he did all that much work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But whatever. I mean, he's in high school now. And it's funny that you say that about like being a kid, because one of the first things that he said going into high school, I asked him what he was looking forward to. And he was like, well, I'm hoping that nobody has any of those like stupid pictures on like the worksheets of like little kids and puppy dogs, mm-hmm. like all the sort of primary little kid stuff. And it's like, I had never known that that stuff really bothered him because he'd never mentioned it before, but it was the first thing that he said. And it was, I mean, it's that same thing of like, finally we get to be like, mm-hmm. not adults, but like treated like capable humans.
Yeah.
So,
because they're thinking on such a deep level a lot of the time, yeah, that to sort of take that away and give a worksheet with a cute little puppy on it, it's almost like my son takes it as an insult. He takes it as, you don't get me, you don't respect me, that you're trying to control me, and he feels very just misunderstood. But at the same time, as a teacher myself, and now learning so much from my own child, because I think, like you mentioned, I've never taken any classes on any of this. It was never offered. It's not a thing. Yeah. But my own son has taught me that, you know, education for gifted kids can look like so many different things, and they pass quick. They're not looking for hard work. They're looking for things that light them up, you know, passions. Then again, isn't that really what every student deserves, to be learning about things that light them up, and even if they're not gifted?
Yeah. So that's, as my, you know, as an educator, I'm actually teaching again as well now. And so I'm a, you know, coach and now educator with kids again. And that's my philosophy too, is like, the way that we should be teaching gifted kids is kind of what all kids need. Like, even because some kids can thrive in a more, you know, regimented fashion, it doesn't mean that they wouldn't benefit from more individualized instruction, or, you know, those challenges that really kind of spark the creativity. So I agree with that. I think there's lots of room for improvement in how we just teach all kids.
Yes.
Especially now that the world is changing too. I mean, there's so many ways that, like, creativity and understanding the world and making those kind of random connections from one thing to another, like, that's what's going to be valuable in the future, or what is valuable even now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I've often found, this is a bit of a little sidetrack here, but I have often found that students who are not gifted necessarily, and actually may struggle a lot in school, but they light up when we finally get to a science experiment, where we start talking about a war in social studies, certain topics that kind of gloss over, you have to do math and you have to read and you have to write. And all of a sudden they're engaged and they're participating and they're interested. Yeah. And it's like, okay, you tapped into that thing for what, you know, an hour a week. Okay, great. But what if we could tap into that thing? We're trying to always bring, education is trying to bring up the kids who are struggling and catch them up and pass the test. And it's kind of a bottom approach, bottom to top, but we're going about it in all the wrong way. And what if we just let them learn the way they want to learn, which is exactly what gifted kids teach us too. That's I could have a whole other podcast just on that topic, because that's a loaded one. But
for sure.
But even with that, there you are, still knowing what your kids need, and sort of holding space for them in that way, advocating when needing to, and other times just letting them sort of figure it out on their own. And that's exactly what our kids do need. So kudos to you for sort of figuring that out and how to support them. And I know,
well, it's not, you know, easy. I tried as much as I could, right? I mean, I think throughout the whole process, at least for me, you're kind of constantly wondering, am I doing the right thing? Like, is this the right decision? Should we do this or that? Or, you know, it's hard because there's no necessarily like right answer. It's all just kind of nebulous, and you choose one path and it works for a bit, and then you shift. And I think that makes it hard because there's so many unknowns. I mean, even throughout the whole, even now, right? Like, even that they're older, there's still some unknowns of, you know, ability levels and challenge, you know, are they getting challenged? And it's constant. So I guess my recommendation to other moms is like, try to own that as much as possible and just recognize that like, there's no right answer, and to take the weight off a little bit, because if you expect yourself to make the right choice and the right answer all the time, like, that's tough and really not achievable.
I agree. I had someone on my podcast early on, a wonderful therapist, and she talked about putting drops in the bucket, where, you know, there's never a right answer. It's a little bit here and on the one hand, and you're helping out and supporting this one piece, and that's going to cause this other piece to suffer a little bit. Yeah. And that's a choice you make. And then you kind of go the other way and you fill up a different bucket, a different need, and mm-hmm. something else starts to suffer a little in that way. There is no magic here. There's no secret. It's every kid is different, trial and error. Mm-hmm. every day is different. Like it's hard for moms and dads, mm-hmm. but I do think that moms carry an additional burden of just feeling this massive weight of responsibility on raising their kids.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I agree. It's hard. And you made it to the teenage years pretty much. right. And so a lot of, you know, I've got some listeners with teens and I've got some with younger kids, but either way, you're like, oh, the teenage years. And, you know, we dream, we know that I know how teenagers can be in general, mm-hmm. but at the same time, hopefully they can now advocate for themselves a little more, mm-hmm. and sort of be their own people. And that must be nice. That must be, I look forward to that day. I don't know if that's true for you.
You know, but it's definitely bringing its own new challenges for us, especially because my son just got a phone for the first time. Oh, so that's a new challenge.
Yep.
It's a whole nother podcast as well. The mm-hmm. screen time stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think what's worked best for us, is just trying to keep the communication open and talking through, I mean, not overly, I can be a little bit of a lecturer with my, at least that's what he says, which I totally get because mm-hmm. everything turns into a life lesson with me a little bit. But like, if you try to just connect, like I can see even when he's either of them, if they get grumpy or anxious or mad or whatever, like we still can kind of connect. Mm-hmm. And so I keep trying to remind myself, like, no matter what is going on, like if they're not doing certain things that we want them to do, or, you know, they're being rude here and there or whatever, it's like, they're happy kids. Like, especially now when, you know, the different rates for anxiety and suicide and all those things are higher. I'm like, they are at their core, they're happy kids. Mm-hmm. I'm holding on to that and hoping that it, you know, we keep that and the communication lines open. So hopefully that will carry us through high school and mm-hmm. beyond. But
and I'm guessing it will, because I loved the way that when you mentioned that you sort of turn everything into a life lesson and, you know, as a normal teenager will do, they're like, mom, like knock it off, you know? Yeah. And yet instead of fighting back on that and getting defensive, you're like laughing about it. You're right. Like I do that. And yeah. that is holding space for your children right there. I totally know that feeling. And, you know, your kids feel that connection when it's like, I get my mom and she gets me. And for any child, but especially a complicated kid.
Yeah.
The way that you advocate just by sort of allowing them to say, hey, like, I don't like that, you know, don't do that. Is really inspirational, honestly. Now
what this is also inspirational, super inspirational. The other thing that I found that works really well is watching YouTube with them.
I can only imagine what you're seeing.
I can only handle so much and I can't necessarily watch the other people playing Minecraft stuff.
I can't imagine why.
But there are some really funny YouTubers, and so I've watched a little bit with them, and it does, like, it's weird, but it does create like a, I'm interested in them.
Yes.
You know, connection that
yes.
is kind of fun. So
you're not going to start making TikToks anytime soon.
Oh my gosh. No.
No. Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, more power to you, but that's a whole other beast.
Right. I've never actually been on TikTok at all. So,
you know what? It's better that way. There's it. Just keep it. Just keep it.
I can barely handle the social media that I have access to myself. So,
yes, I totally get that. I love how I love how sure you are of yourself, or at least it does come across that way. It's like you do know what your goals are. You know what you're reaching toward. You know who you are as a person, as a mother. I just I admire that. That is something that I struggle with. I feel like I kind of know, but then I also can be very wishy-washy, especially when what I thought might work, quote unquote, for my children doesn't work. And then I'm like, okay, well, that was what was natural to me. So now what do? I start to lose that sense of my motherhood, I guess.
Well, I think, I mean, here's what I think from like a coach standpoint.
Yeah.
My background is in sociology too. So it's like, I feel like moms have so much pressure to do all the things perfectly in their own life, in their work, with their kids, with their relationships. Like there's just so much. And it's easy to get lost in all the shoulds and what you're supposed to do and what's expected and all those things kind of, and the judgments and competition and whatever, all those things just kind of bundle up and sit right on your back, like a super heavy backpack. And so, yeah, like it takes some time and really concerted effort. And sometimes moms are so busy and overtaxed that like, there's no time. And it's really hard to get through that stuff and figure out like how to get rid of it or how to see what really matters through all of those layers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I agree. And that's a great segue into you, life coaching, books. Tell us about your projects and this sort of side of you.
Well, I've been a life coach for a while. And when I first started, I was not a parent at all. And so when I became a mom, I was like, oh my gosh, like the people who need extra support is all the moms who are trying to do everything. So, and then, you know, getting into the 2E space as well and the giftedness and learning more about that, it's like, I feel like my trajectory has sort of been like, because when I first started looking into giftedness and everything, it was really hard to find information. And then from that, you know, 10 years ago to now, there's a lot of information out there, which is fantastic. But it's still, you still have to weed through it all and you still have to figure it out. And the journey is just confusing. And I think within that, it's easy for mom, like that's another layer where moms can kind of get lost, as if motherhood wasn't hard enough and kind of keeping your own identity. That's like an extra layer on the top of the cake. So yeah, just that shifted my focus, I think. And a lot of the self-care pieces came up. And so I started focusing on that. And I'm also a yoga instructor too. So I kind of weave that in as well. Mm. But my most recent project is working on this book with Gifted Homeschoolers Forum Press. And it's been like fascinating because I interviewed almost 40 people kind of during the pandemic, which was also interesting. Mostly moms, you know, you put the call out for stuff like that and it's all the moms who answer. So I have a few dads that I know personally that I asked, and then some spouses. So I have like a handful of dads in the mix as well, but that kind of shows like the moms are the ones who are in this, they're in the Facebook groups, they're in the research, they're in the stuff to try to figure it out. So that has been fascinating. I'm still kind of just mid data crunching and trying to find all the patterns and stuff, but I'm really looking at like the differences in the experience for parents at like along the journey, if that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah. Because they're so much focused on the kid and helping the kids, and which I love because we're, you know, all kids need support, but my work is trying to support the parents and especially the moms so they can then like have the brain space and the energy and just the joy to be present and really show up for themselves and their kids.
Yeah. I love that so much. That is something that mothers struggle with. And honestly, it does go deeper than just raising neurodiverse kids. And that's a whole other piece to it. But in general, I don't know, the role of a mother stereotypically, you know, and over time is this caretaking role. The caretaking role comes with the research and it comes with all the appointments, and it's the thing that you think about right before you fall asleep and the first thing you think about when you wake up, and there is no other space in your brain for other things. This is it. This is your life, and it is raising these kids. And I'm not saying that dads don't think that way, but I don't think it's quite on the same level as moms.
I don't think it is either. And it's different. And I mean, again, I only talked to a handful, but what I found, or what I seem to find, because I don't want to make any definitive conclusions yet, but the talking about it piece, like moms usually, again, a little bit stereotypical, mm-hmm. but the moms I talk to, like they talk things out and they want to know the information, and they really want to like process it and dig in and figure things out and then, you know, talk about it with their spouse or somebody else. Whereas the dads, most of them that I talked to anyway, they were like, if they talk about stuff, it kind of relives the experience and they don't want that. It's like, it doesn't solve anything for them. It brings them back to like the trauma kind of. And that was kind of interesting because it's not that they're not thinking about things at all. It's just that their process is different. But from a relationship standpoint, that was really interesting because that's like a huge disconnect in couples, is that, you know, the mom usually needs to talk things out, even if it's not like trying to solve a problem. It's just that there's so much invisible kind of emotional stuff that you're holding in your head, and it's hard to hold all of that and all the normal life things too. And so having an outlet for that, and usually it would be your spouse, right? But then when both of you are so taxed from, you know, emotionally from raising these kids, it's tough to connect when you have different communication styles.
Yeah. And I think the processing piece was, like you said, very much a thing. Mm-hmm. Dads are thinking about it too. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's that next step after, where for a lot of mothers, again, I know this isn't everybody, but I do think, and certainly me, after I do the thinking about it, after I recall a meltdown or a really tough moment with my kids, my next move is usually with motivation behind it and drive. Okay, this was a nightmare. I cannot do this again. Google, Google, Google.
Right.
Check a Facebook group. What should I do next time? Because I do not want to experience this again. Mm-hmm. Whereas perhaps a dad, and I'm thinking at least my own husband, who of course he's thinking about it, but his desire to go research for an hour after is like in the negatives. Like there's nothing, no piece of that he wants. And it took me time to realize that it's not that he doesn't want to learn about his child and the ins and outs, but the process of finding the information and taking it in is not effective for his brain in the way that he works. So it's interesting that you talk about the process, and yet, but there still is a burden there on moms and a disconnect between the partnership that can often lead to resentment and, you know, anger. And I don't know about everybody. I certainly can't speak for everybody, but I know that my husband and I over the years have been in those moments of tension around raising my kid than any other topic.
Yep.
It's always been about our son, because in those tough moments where he's lost his mind, neither of us know what the right move is, because there isn't even a right move. So what do you think we should do? All right, you try that. No, that didn't work. Let me try this. And there's this tension, and it's hard. It's just hard.
Yeah. And that's the pattern that I really found with the couples that I talked to, or the parents. I mean, if I didn't talk to both, then I'm just going off of the mom's recount of what occurs, but it sounds pretty common. And the thing is, kind of wrapped in that piece is the learning about your own giftedness, perhaps, or TUI, whatever, you know, experience that you've had. A lot of people kind of realize, or that I talked to anyway, and this was true for myself, kind of as you learn more about your kids' experience, then you're like, oh, I did that when I was a kid, or like, this makes sense now, because like looking at it from an adult perspective with information now, you can look back at your own experience and say, that's interesting. So, and I think, you know, even that information, it's going to be processed differently depending on who you are. And, you know, if you're the information seeker, then you're going to seek information. If you're like the ponder, keep it to yourself. And it's interesting to me, like, as I was talking with everyone, you know, I asked about like career changes and different shifts and, you know, how things were organized. And one of the things that came up in a lot of the interviews was that the women were in fields like education or psychology or like historian, reporter, you know, kind of things that were more gathering research or with kids or, you know, figuring things out. And so the explanation for why they were doing those things was because their field was close to that. But to me, and that's valid, right? But it's like, there's so many people that I see and that I talk to, it's like, that's just an easy story to like explain it, because it's really all the moms. Like, even of the dads who are involved, they don't do nearly as much of that emotional labor. At least that's what I have been seeing. Mm-hmm. So
I like the phrase emotional labor, because that is a perfect way to put it. I think that sometimes it's physical too, you know, in terms of like doing the research. I mean, my husband does not do the research, but it's okay. We've come to an understanding now that that's not effective for him, that he's not going to search through multiple Facebook groups looking for information and be able to come away with a notebook full. Like, that is not how he works at all. Yeah. And that's okay, but it does still feel heavy for so many moms. And I know that feeling well too. And that's why I love what you do, especially the life, you know, the life coaching for mothers, I think is so important. Is that something that you still do? Like, if moms who are listening want to contact you and
Yeah. And my ethos on that is kind of trying to get rid of as much of the background noise. Like, if you think about all the things that take up our attention and brain space, basically, there's so much background noise for moms in terms of like what I said before, like the expectations, the shoulds, the, like, it's all in there. And we're typically, women are kind of trained to be very compliant, very nice, like suck it up, sacrifice what you need to make everybody else happy. Like, those kinds of things are just ingrained. And so it takes a lot of energy to undo all that stuff. And it, you know, it's hard to do on your own too. I mean, it helps to have somebody who's kind of been there, not exact same experience, but just kind of knowing the process of when to catch, like, oh, that, you know, that's not just you. Like, that's a thing that everybody experiences. And this is how you can kind of move forward from it. So yeah,
I love that so much. And that kind of leads into how can my listeners find you? They want to know about, again, finding you in terms of the life coaching, but also this book that's coming. What information do you want to give them on you and how they can reach out?
Yeah, well, I have a website. It's just my name, karamclain.com. And we do have show notes, so we can put stuff in show notes. And then I'm on both Facebook and Instagram. Those are my social medias that I use anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I can give those addresses. It's Instagram. It's just Kara J. McLean. So CaraJMacLean. Mm-hmm. And then Kara McLean Coaching on Facebook. But yeah.
Oh, cool.
I've been on social media less lately because I've been trying to like distance a little bit, but I'm still there. Mm-hmm. And if people reach out, then I'll definitely respond.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that some will, and I will put all of your information in the show notes as well.
Okay. Great.
But I think that this is so great to hear someone who gets it. And not only are you getting it on a personal level as a mom, but you're also taking that to the next level to give back to other moms. And that's pretty awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And I, like I said, your whole demeanor is just very chill and relaxed and maybe not all the time, but that's definitely how you are now. And
yeah. Not all the time.
Works out well. Yeah. But
thank you. It's funny. I usually consider myself a pretty chill, like calm person. And then being a yoga teacher, I've, you know, taught at studios and some people are like, they take chill to another level. And I'm like, I always feel like super frantic around a certain people that are just like so zen, but that's fun too.
So. You know, I think your amount of zen is perfect for all the things that you are doing. a nice balance. And I love the fact that the books behind you are in rainbow color. that's just my
COVID project.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's very appealing. So Kara, thank you. I mean, thanks for sharing all of your knowledge, but also being someone that other moms can sort of turn to and find out how to support themselves in this process of raising neurodiversity. Yeah, it's not tough. So important.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. It's been great to be here. So yeah, if people have questions or anything, I'm working on the book. It's going slower than I imagined. It's kind of turned into a bigger project, but still coming.
So. You sharing any due dates or anything like that yet or not yet?
No, not sharing due dates. I was hoping to have a draft by the end of the year. So that's my goal right now.
Okay.
So we'll see.
We will anxiously await the arrival of your book and maybe bring you back on.
Ooh, that'd be
fun. Out and talk more about that. That would be really cool.
Okay.
I would love that. Well, thank you, Kara. This has been great.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to talk with me personally, where we can chat and just get to know each other like old friends, I would love to do a discovery call with you. Go to my website ontheharddays.com and click on schedule a call. And if you're not already subscribed to this podcast, please do so that you get the latest when they roll out. Not to mention, please leave a review if you feel like this episode spoke to you. That way, the podcast will be shown to more mothers. And finally, you can find me on Instagram at ontheharddays with dots in between each word, or in my free Facebook community, On the Hard Days Podcast and Community. If you are feeling isolated in your parenting journey, I encourage you to reach out through any of these means so that I can connect you with your people and support you in whatever way you need.